All right, so this is Adam, and I'm on the phone with both Brian and Andy Schmidt of IDW Publishing, editor of G.I. Joe. Brian, you want to say hi so people can recognize your voice?
Hey, this is Brian, and if you're listening to this, you probably have heard it too many times.
And hi, Andy.
Hello. How you guys doing?
Not bad. It's Wednesday. It's comic book day. It's always the best day of the week, right?
Yeah, I've already been to the shop myself.
Yeah, I just got home in time to start setting this up. That's why I'm a little late.
I actually back from the shop as well and am staring at a copy of issue number 8 of your G.I. Joe series on my desk right now.
I like the way you work, Brian. I didn't actually buy any of the books that I work on because I get them for free. But for those of you wondering, what is it that Andy Schmidt buys on a random Wednesday?
Actually, yeah, tell us.
I bought previews. I bought Chris Russo's G-Man number 1 from Image Comics, which is what I think a very funny project. I got the Marvels project, not one but 2 issues of Wednesday Comics because I missed last week. The Ultimate Avengers, the Mark Miller Pacheco thing, because I love me some Pacheco art. And I got the Originals by Dave Gibbons, the trade paperback.
I'll second the endorsement of Chris's G-Man title. We're big fans of Chris's many Marvel stuff, and you know the jokes and the temperament is the same. I mean, Chris is the same guy, and his work is the same. You know, you're not getting Spider-Man or Hawkeye doing the jokes. It's his own character. So if you like many Marvel, G-Man's a good place to get your fix for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's and he's just remarkably funny and talented. I can't say enough good things about him or the book. I try and see him at every convention he's at, go over, hang out. He's actually one of the guys responsible for getting me into comics.
Really?
Oddly enough, yeah.
How does that story play out?
Well, he and I were interns at Marvel in the summer of 1997 together. And he was finishing up school. I had a year left. And he got hired on in our production department. And then when the assistant editor job opened up about 5 years later, he called me up, told me about it, and helped get me in for an interview. We had maintained friendships for the 5 years, but ultimately he was the guy that, you know, he was the one who said, "Hey, now you need to call now."
And always nice to have somebody on the inside looking out for you.
It is.
Well, while we're talking about Chris, make sure you check out his website for anybody who's listening and hasn't gone to it. He's got a lot of really funny stuff on it. He's got a couple of video games on it that are new, and he's also got a pretty funny Hawkeye theme song.
Oh, yeah, the Hawkeye thing is great.
It's up there, as well as some slightly animated mini Marvel episodes that he and his brother did that are also very funny.
Yeah, and that website for anyone listening is chrisgcomics.com.
It is. Look at that. It's definitely worth it.
I think for a podcast where we're supposed to be promoting IDW stuff, we've done a really nice job of. We've hit Image, Vertigo, Marvel, DC. We've done a nice job covering everyone else. But yeah, Chris is such a good friend that we should. I'm going to go ahead and plug it again. chrisgcomics.com. Go there. And then go to IDW Publishing and buy some G.I. Joe and Transformers books.
And there's an interview with Chris on our website, on the front page of our website right now.
So. Yes, there is.
Look at that.
Let's turn it back to IDW and G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe has a very long history in the comic book medium. Can you give us any sort of insight or backstory about how G.I. Joe landed at IDW after being at some other publishers?
Not really, but I'll give you what I do know, because I actually got hired here. I got hired here after they'd acquired the license. I remember reading the announcement, like, "Oh, cool, that's good." And then I had no idea I was going to be working on it at the time. They called me a little while later, but my understanding is basically Hasbro was taking pitches on it, so a bunch of publishers went up, put together, you know, whatever pitches they had. I don't know that. I don't even know that they were necessarily pitches for here's the story we would tell, or if it was just here's what we can do for you. Here's our business model. I don't know what it was. But you know, IDW, I think, had a leg up in that they were already in business with them with a Transformers license, so that, that always helped.
When you jumped on as editing the series, were the plans for the franchise kind of already in place, and you were kind of handed, here's what you're making for dinner, and here's the ingredients, make it work? Or was it still in discussion that we're going to reboot this, and we're going to do this and this with it?
Yeah, a little bit of both, yes and no. I mean, when I jumped on, they were planning on doing one book, which at the time was it had been announced, so this is no real secret here. But Larry Hama was going to write it, and Robert Atkins was going to be the artist, and then I came on and looked at it and said, "Dudes, this is G.I. freaking Joe! Like, what are you doing? What's with this one book thing?" You know, and so I talked with the guys here at IDW, and of course I talked to the guys at Hasbro, and you know, we all came up with the idea to do a G.I. Joe as a book with Robert on art and Chuck on the writing, and then Larry would do the origin story with Tom and Mike on art, and then the wild card, which I threw out, is, hey, we're going to do a book called G.I. Joe Cobra. What do you think? And that's what the Zero issue became, was the sort of the prelude to the three different titles. So, yes, I mean, the decision to do a reboot, to start from a Zero issue, not tying it to old continuity, that was, I never was in a discussion about that. That's what we were doing from day one. And, you know, Larry and Robert were both already on board, which I was 100% behind, because they're great. And so, yeah, you know, working with the guys here and at Hasbro, we sort of brought in everybody else and blew up the launch to something bigger. And at the same time, we were doing the movie stuff. The movie stuff was actually, the movie tie-in books were actually more set when I got here than the comic book continuity line, because they had like the drop dead date, like everything had to be done.
Right.
So Chuck was already on those. Shannon was already doing the art on the prequel. Denton was already writing the movie adaptations, and Casey was doing the art on that. So that stuff was much more set. Plus, it was tied directly into this movie thing, so we all knew what that was. But the comics continuity stuff, I had a lot more freedom with, I guess.
With Transformers, you share editing duties with one other person. Are you the only editor for G.I. Joe?
Well, there's just been a lot of restructuring going on. So right now, basically, there's an editorial group.
Okay.
that like subgroup. There's an editorial group for IDW, but within that, there's now Denton Tipton, myself, and Carlos Guzman is our editorial assistant. Mm-hmm. And basically, the three of us all talk about all the different stories and all that sort of stuff, and then we sort of split up the books appropriately. So there are three editors. We don't all work on every book. But there are three editors involved in the mix on Transformers and G.I. Joe. And you know, I'm the main interface with Hasbro and mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. So Denton basically was just so bogged down with all the Transformers tie-in and stuff. Those books were, it was just too much for one man to do. So Hasbro really liked the direction we were going with on G.I. Joe, and so it seemed like a logical choice to have me come over and help out with Transformers too.
G.I. Joe, with all the different stories, like you're the Cobra story, the origin story, I mean, all that stuff has to be pretty closely tied together. So you must be pretty busy on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, for the first, you know, I'm relatively new to the Transformers stuff. I mean, that was really Denton's bag. I really came in towards the end of All Hail Megatron just to help push stuff through, just so that it wouldn't sit on his desk for 2 days. It would sit, you know, it would sit for 1 day because I could get to it. And I was really just sort of, you know, I was really still, you know, All Hail Megatron was really Denton's game, and I was coming on more as just an extra pair of hands at first, and then slowly got more involved in the story stuff to where we are with a new launch coming in November, where we're launching the Transformers ongoing series with G.I. Joe. I mean, that was my focus. That was my world from day one here at IDW. And I was also working at Star Trek at the time, but really G.I. Joe was the thing. Star Trek was already rolling, so that was something I was inheriting. G.I. Joe was like, come in and make this as good as you possibly can, which is hopefully people thought we did all right with that.
So you're pretty controlling about things, or do you let the guys kind of float ideas and stuff?
you might get a different answer if you ask them. I don't know. I think everybody sort of came up with their own thing. I came up with the idea of doing the three books was me, but what those three books were was up to the individual creative teams. And then what I was there was basically to make sure nothing was too similar, and you know that there were no story problems, that every story was as good as it could be, and that I wanted to make three distinct books that appealed to different sets of sensibilities. So in an ideal world, everybody that read G.I. Joe liked all three books, but they weren't all built for the same person. You know, Cobra's built for a little different audience than, you know, the G.I. Joe book by Chuck and Robert. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty clear when people read them. And it's funny online because people are like, oh, I love this one, but I don't like this one as much, and this one's okay. I'm like, well, yeah, they're built that way. You're supposed to be that way. And I'll read another post, and you know, that guy loved a different one and was, you know, not, you know, didn't like the other one. Of course, that's because we're not dumb. but that was sort of, to that extent, like I was sitting back, but I immediately put everybody in touch with everybody else. All the writers were in touch with all the other writers, and all the artists were in touch with all the artists and all the writers. So the idea here was really to get everybody to really become a team, in that they were all reading each other's stuff, they were all looking at each other's art, and there are a couple of different outcomes when you do that. Fortunately, what we got on G.I. Joe was sort of the best possible outcome, which is they'd read, you know, somebody else's script and go, man, that was good. I got to step my game up. And there was this really healthy level of competition between them and between the artists. And it all came together, you know, really, really nicely. But am I controlling? No, I don't think so. But, ask Chuck Dixon and he might tell you differently. I don't know. I hope not.
You mentioned that you have the different creative teams kind of in touch with each other, and even though the series are separate right now, you actually are going to have a little bit of crossover with that. As I see, you're going to use G.I. Joe Origins to kind of give some of the backstories as they relate to current issues of G.I. Joe, starting with the next issue, aren't you?
Yeah, the issue 6 was the Scarlet issue, which is a fairly standalone issue that just it's a good story. We all liked it, but it doesn't directly tie into anything. The next issue 7, which is about Mainframe, who is currently showing up in they're tied. But again, you can read Origins number 7 by itself, and you get a great story, or you can read G.I. Joe, you know, the current storyline going on there. And if you never read the Mainframe Origins issue, that's fine too. They don't have to be read together, but yeah, they relate. I mean, obviously, you know, if you are reading both, you get sort of a bigger picture, and it's that much cooler that they're layered. But not all of the Origins issues are going to be like that. You know, we've got some stuff coming up where with Beachhead and Baroness that are really great stories that give you a lot of insight into the characters, but aren't necessary to read the regular G.I. Joe book. I mean, that's one of the things I try to be pretty careful about, is making sure that we're not arm-twisting people into buying more content. Hopefully what we're doing is we're telling good enough stories that they want to seek out more, and then they will go buy more stuff, but I don't want that ill will of twisting people's arm into doing it.
You're also going to have a series that had its first issue also today on the stand. It's called G.I. Joe Special, and it that's going to be kind of like a solo character spotlight for the most part, kind of. I think this month you're introducing a new character, but you're also going to use it to spotlight individual characters that normally, you know, wouldn't have their own comic.
Well, actually, the Helix issue, which came out today, is, I mean, it's a special, but it's a special. It's a self-contained special. It's not the start. It's not the start of a series. And the reason it has a number one on it is because I used to work at Marvel, and everything had a number on it.
Everything has a number on it. Yeah.
Even one shots, and I thought that was like an industry standard, and so I put a number one on it. And then I've been asked about 12 times, why does this have a number one? When's number two? I'm like, there's no number two. That's it. It's a special. So that might have been my fault. But yeah, that's not a regular series, but we will do specials. There's another special. There's a G.I. Joe Cobra special coming out in September, which will blow your mind. It's so good. But that's not like, it's not G.I. Joe Special number 2. It's just G.I. Joe Cobra Special to Max and Zaymon.
Doing those kind of things is something maybe that you guys are interested in to spotlight some of the individual characters like you just talked about with Origins.
Helix was a case. Agent Helix was a case where she was really being debuted in the video game, which just came out. So we wanted to sort of time it in with the launch of that video game, and so it became a special instead of an issue of Origins or an issue in the regular book. So that's how that one sort of happened.
I also heard from Ray Park himself that the Big Screen Snake Eyes is going to co-write a Snake Eyes series for IDW. Can you tell me about that series?
Absolutely. I can tell you that it comes out in October. It is Ray co-writing it with Kevin Van Hook, which is a really good team. The artist is Lee Ferguson, and launches in October. And it is a prequel to the G.I. Joe movie, and it explores Snake Eyes and his various relationships, and I remember telling the guys, like, are you sure you want to do this? Because Kevin has written comics before. Kevin's an old pro, so I wasn't worried about him. But I was like, guys, you're talking about doing a 4-issue miniseries by a guy that doesn't talk. but they were happy to take on the challenge, and it's some really good stuff, and there's some good backstory elements that'll add some layers to some of the stuff that you'll see in the movie, and it's good. That's a 4-issue miniseries, just called G.I. Joe: The Rise of Cobra, Snake Eyes.
Now the G.I. Joe Cobra series, which you mentioned a couple of times, right now that's a limited series, correct? Is there any plans on extending that or doing follow-up series for that storyline?
Yeah, the 4 issues of G.I. Joe Cobra that came out are probably, in my nearly 10-year run as a comic book editor, are probably the most critically acclaimed comics I've ever worked on, which is hilarious because every review started with, "I can't believe this is a G.I. Joe comic." Like, I can't believe that a licensed comic, I guess, is what they're implying. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, it was so incredibly well received that Hasbro actually just kind of told me that doing a sequel or not doing a sequel was not an option, that we had to follow it up, which was fine because I was already planning on it, because I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. So there's the 4 issues that are out, and then in September there's a special, because there's a twist at the end where you find out who the villain is, and so there's a special in September that is about the villains. And we've just announced that there will in fact be a Cobra 2, that we will do another miniseries.
Who, Chris Gage and Mike Costa are the writers for that. Who came up with the concept?
You know, that was just a really nice combination of events. I mean, it really gelled. The idea of doing a book about Cobra with somebody sort of infiltrating it, if my memory is correct, sort of came from the IDW side of things. I called up Chris Gage, who I had worked with a lot over at Marvel, and said, this would be a perfect book for you. It's sort of, an espionage sort of thing. It's the kind of material he'd handle real well. And he immediately said no, because he's too busy. Yeah. He's Christos Gage. He's bigger than all this. But he said he liked this guy, Mike Costa, this new young writer. And I said, okay, well, all right, give me his email. I'll find out. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to work with this guy. He's only written like 2 comics. So Mike sent me his Authority comics that he wrote, The Secret History of Jack Hawksmoor, which were excellent. And I was just floored that this guy had not really written any other comics before. So then I started talking with Mike, and I said to Chris, I'll do this if you co-write it with him, because I need to know. I've got an anchor man I can really count on. That's you, Chris. But if you want to do it with Mike, that's fine with me. And then the two of them, figured out, it was Mike's idea to use Chuckles, which we had to convince Hasbro was a good idea, which wasn't hard to do, but it was just funny because they're like, you want to use Chuckles? Really? He's the guy with a Hawaiian shirt, right? And yeah, that's the one. So, a lot of it really came from Mike. a lot of it came from Chris, you know, and a lot of it just came out of conversations, and who knows where each piece of it actually, you know, really wound up coming from. But the really cool thing about Cobra, which was the one where when I turned in the outline for that, I was like, we're so not going to get away with this. Hasbro immediately got right behind it. It was like, this is great. This is awesome. This is setting a new tone. This is the kind of stuff we really want. We want you to take risks. We want you to, and I was just like, wow, that's awesome. That's amazing. So that's sort of how it worked. And then Antonio, the artist who did an amazing job. And when you read this, the Cobra special coming out in September, you'll understand why I'm going to say this, but he is a phenomenal talent. You'll be seeing stuff from him for a long time to come. And I would say from more than just one publisher. I think once this next issue comes out, people are going to really take notice to what this guy can do.
I will certainly echo the acclaim that you've gotten for that series of the new stuff that you guys have put out, which I'm buying all of it. But the new stuff that you guys have put out, it's been my favorite. I think it's been a really solid book.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I do love it.
I got to say, I haven't read any of the G.I. Joe stuff yet, or hadn't. I bought issue 0, and it just sat in the stack for a while, and I bought issue 1 of the Chuck Dixon. I read them both today, and I'm ready to go pick up some trades.
First G.I. Joe trade is out, and yeah. The Origins trade comes out pretty soon, but I don't have a street date in front of me.
That 0 issue, I really, really liked it a lot, just the different stories. Each story in there seemed like they're pretty strong.
Yeah, the really cool thing about the Origins issue is that Larry was the guy who turned in his Origins script first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, Larry knows how to write his G.I. Joe. I will never, you know, say anything against that. But as an editor coming into a new thing where Hasbro and IDW both agree we want a new tone, we want a new take on it, going to the guy that's been writing G.I. Joe off and on for 25 years is actually kind of risky because he may be so set in his ways or whatever. So I had this conversation with Larry where I said, you know, this is what we were going to do. How do you feel about it? Larry's like, you know, Larry's like very chill. He's just like, yeah, that sounds fine. I think I can do that. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, all right then. And so he turned in this five-page story where Hawk basically threatened to kill Duke. And I was like, well, you set a new tone. Well done. And I sent that off to Chuck and Mike and Chris and Hasbro and showed it to the other guys here. And then that was really what cemented the whole thing. And it was really the tone and tenor of that story that really set the whole thing for Chuck and for Mike and Chris to write. And that really cemented, this is real now. This is what we're doing. And I think it sent the signal to the other writers, you know, from when I talked to them, like, we can really do that? Like, we can get away with that? Okay. All right, I'm for it. And it really got the ball rolling. So, you know, for those people who think, you know, Larry didn't have as big a hand in this as they had wanted, he managed to be the one, again, to sort of set the whole tone for it, so...
And I think that's really interesting what you said about, I think that a lot of people, when it was announced that Larry was going to be the writer for some of the new G.I. Joe stuff, that fans of the comic book G.I. Joe series probably thought that was a slam dunk, but I think that's very interesting that that's something that you guys maybe had some pause over because you knew you wanted to take things in a different direction and how it ended up working out. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, well, one of the things, was, you know, I mean, when I came on, you know, and we started talking about doing, you know, when I remember this, we were actually on a conference call and with Hasbro, and that's when the idea of doing 3 books came to mind. So I'm on this conference call talking about G.I. Joe, and I was like, well, let's just do 3 books. And I had given it no thought prior to that. And so I just threw the idea, and I'm on the call with Chris Ryle, the editor-in-chief and publisher, and he just sort of turns and gives me this look, you know, and we're on a call, so Hasbro can't see this look. And it's just like, are you crazy? I'm like, let's just do it. And then we sort of figured it out later, but, you know, one of the things was to appeal to, obviously, your core fan, the guys who've been there and have helped build these characters up and the vehicles and the brand names and all that stuff. I mean, you don't want to alienate them. And Larry is a great way, before he's even written a word, just to say Larry Hama's name, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, I'm interested. You know. And then Chuck, who's also a great writer, has never had a real chance to do G.I. Joe, but he has a pretty big fan following too. But you know, we were thinking he'll be very similar to Larry in that he really knows the military stuff, like he knows how to do this, but he'll bring a different flavor and different approach to it. And then so that was sort of our outreach to sort of, you know, some of those fringe fans, hopefully, to bring them in. And then Cobra was our attempt to grab people who'd never read a G.I. Joe comic before. So it was fairly calculated. And I remember there was a lot of speculation online of, well, why isn't Larry doing the ongoing series? Why is he doing the Origins? You know, have they sidelined him or whatever? And I kept thinking to myself, gee, let me think. If I had Larry writing the ongoing series and I had somebody else do the Origin, wouldn't you guys crucify me just as much for that? Like, so we figured, you know, Larry, who has lived with these characters the longest, really, you know, and Origins is more character driven. It felt right for Larry to be on that book. So,
I think you're right. I think to a certain extent, that's just people kind of, it hasn't happened yet, so they kind of want something to be opinionated or possibly complain about. So they're just kind of picking their battle. But I don't think you guys have promoted any of it to where you're making a title seem like it's the flagship or, more important, you're just, here are our G.I. Joe titles. Pick one.
Pick
the one that you like the best, kind of a situation.
And there will be different times when one will outshine the others. I mean, we've actually got it's a flexible plan, but we've got a plan in place for literally years worth of stuff. And there will be times when other books will be, that'll be the one that people are talking about, and then, you know, 6 months later it'll be this other one that people are talking about. And again, doesn't mean you need to read them all. You know, we're not gonna be doing that at any time. But there'll be different stuff going on, and we're paying attention. We're listening to what people are saying, and we're always course correcting. One of the things you have to do as an editor, especially an editor of a franchise of multiple titles, is keep getting that feedback and refining and going, okay, well, this didn't come off the way I thought it would, or this twist didn't work the way I thought it would. What can I do next time to make sure that it comes off sharper and it comes off better? You know, and ideally what's going to happen is these books are just going to continue to get better and better, as opposed to what often can happen, which is everybody puts all their effort and all their marketing effort and everything into that launch and then sort of lets go and it sort of spirals out of control from there. You know, we set out with a plan. We know where we're going. And we got a lot of twists and a lot of turns in a lot of different places and a lot of ways people, you know, there's going to be a lot of moments where those longtime fans go, oh, that's so great. That's the real classic thing. And there will be other times where they're really shocked because we didn't go the classic route. You know, the idea is to keep it fresh for everybody, old and new fans. And I think these creators are the guys to do that.
I got to meet Robert Atkins at HeroesCon this year, and we have an interview up on the site with him right now about being a fan of the characters and dealing with Hasbro as far as it pertains to his artwork on the series and dealing with, you know, the license, dealing with having to kind of recreate a licensed product and a product that he was familiar with and a fan with. So since he let us know about the artwork side of that, what can you tell us about the editorial side of jumping in on something that you had a lot of interest in going in with, but also having to deal with that Hasbro as part of it being a franchise?
Well, I can tell you that I, too, was a fan. Yeah, I mean, growing up, I mean, the G.I. Joe comic, the G.I. Joe toys, and the G.I. Joe cartoon, I was there for all of them. And I ran with the comic probably till, I don't remember when I would sort of fell off of it, but it was probably in the 50s somewhere. I know it was after issue 50 because I was into Special Missions, and that launched out of issue 50 originally, and I was reading Special Missions for a while. You know, and I would always pop back in, you know, check in, see what's going on, you know, periodically. So, I mean, I was a fan. I watched the cartoon all the way to the end, which would be that the movie. which apparently I'm the only person in history who's willing to go on record and go, you know what, I kind of liked it.
Oh, I love that movie.
There's several of our crew that still think that it's watchable now.
And then, with the toys, I mean, I wasn't as into action figures at that time, so you know, I certainly had a bunch of them, and they were sort of the last of the action figures that I was really into. I certainly grew up with all of this stuff too, but I certainly hadn't paid attention to G.I. Joe a whole lot in the last five, really since it wasn't being published at Marvel. I never had read The Devil's Due, and then when I came on board, I was like, oh, I should probably look at some of this stuff and find out what's going on. You know, so in that respect, I was also coming to it fairly fresh, in that I hadn't watched the cartoon, I hadn't read the old Marvel comics in years and years, and so coming into it, I was fairly fresh, but it was amazing how quickly this stuff started coming back, and I was like, oh, yeah, Crystal Ball, that guy is awesome, you know, or whoever it might be, you know, I mean, it was really, really interesting working on this. I mean, when I was working at Marvel, you know, I always had Tom Brevoort or whomever, you know, above me, watching over what's going on, and you know, pros they've been doing this for a while, and so this was the first time I had come on. I'm like, okay, apparently I'm the guy, and this, you know, on some level, it's on me how this thing goes off, and you know, am I being too referential and too much going into my own mind of what I remember from my childhood, or am I really trying to do something else? It's a very, very difficult thing to do because you want to make your fans happy, but fans don't always know exactly what's going to make them happy, which is sometimes you got to give them something they don't know they want, and then they go, oh, yeah, I did want that. And sometimes if you give them what they say they want, they go, oh, yeah, that was what I said I wanted, but I didn't really. You know, I think on some level they want these things to feel familiar, but also feel fresh at the same time. And I don't know how you find that balance, you know, but we tried and hopefully we succeeded. Yeah, I think we did.
Speaking of, I guess, fresh and familiar, but in the back of that Zero issue, Robert Atkins, who we also spoke of, has a little breakdown of his character designs and kind of some of the things that he came up with. My first question is, he mentions somebody being a big fan of Destro's big red collar.
Yeah, he mentions me being a big fan of that. Yeah, let's go ahead and put that out there. I am a fan of the big red collar.
How did that whole redesign of the characters go? Is that pretty much just a lot of that was on Robert, or did other people have say in that?
Yeah, you know, there are redesigns. Most of this was Robert. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was very little that I chimed in and was like, no, that shouldn't be that way. And really, Hasbro's thing is they just need to look and feel like the characters, you know. So don't draw Duke to look like Destro. That would be Destro, you know. And there are certain elements to these characters that Hasbro wanted to see stay. Like, for example, Duke's scar on his face, right. And you know, Snake Eyes has a, you know, certainly not going to start showing his face. So the idea was that they should, again, look familiar but be sort of updated so that they look like they could be in a modern, you know, comic book today. And Robert just ran with it. I mean, there were very few changes to his designs. And he was pretty faithful to the original toys. You know, I remember the couple things that went back and forth were Destro's collar. And then we went back and forth on Snake Eyes' visor.
Yeah.
Whether it should be the visor or if it should be goggles.
Yeah, and he talks about that in that Zero issue as well, why he made the choices that he made for Snake Eyes.
Yeah, and we wound up splitting the difference because sometimes we're able to give him goggles occasionally in Origins. So we wound up, you know, being able to do that.
Does Hasbro ever talk about making toys, figures based on comic adaptation characters?
Well, they recently announced they were going to make a Transformers character based on a Transformer that first appeared in our Transformers All-Hail Megatron comic, character named Drift. Mm-hmm. That is the first time that I know of that it's been done here. So I haven't really talked to them like about making, you know, IDW universe versions of toys. But I mean, I will if people want that. I'll talk to them. I'll see what they say. Hopefully, they say yes.
Well, I do know people who are collectors of action figures, and a lot of times people that like that, they don't really care where the figure came from as long as it's a new design that they can add to their collection.
And by people, he's speaking of his girlfriend, right? Like every G.I. Joe figure every man has ever made.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the thing for me, you know, I approach this stuff differently. You know, like I said, I was an editor at Marvel, and one of the things I always liked about Marvel comics, and this is true of other DC comics where the property endures despite different creative teams, is one of the things I really liked as a comic book fan was I like to see different artists' interpretations of characters that I knew. So I like to see Kurt Swan Superman versus John Byrne Superman. You know, how is he different? What are the nuances that each artist brings to the table? And so the characters will change, but again, it's like Superman's always Superman, Spider-Man's always Spider-Man, Wolverine's always Wolverine, but I liked to see those differences from the artists. And one of the things that I'm sort of getting used to now that I'm working on G.I. Joe and Transformers is that every time an artist, what looks to me like, I go, oh, okay, that's just the way Don Figueroa draws Optimus Prime, or that's just the way Casey Collar does, or that's the way Robert draws Snake Eyes, and that's the way Tom Feaster draws him, or whatever. A lot of fans of G.I. Joe and Transformers look at that as, oh, that's a redesign, and that's a redesign, and that's a redesign. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to looking at it and go, oh, I like what Tom did with the mask there, or I like what Casey did with the gauntlet there, or you know, that sort of thing. So the idea of making toys, you know, they're this cemented permanent version is not something that I'm really used to thinking about when it comes to approaching the comics. So I like that Robert did his designs, but when Shannon came on with issue 7, I didn't send him, well, actually I did send him Robert's designs, but I told him when I did, this is where we started, but you don't have to draw all the same belt buckles, all the same whistles. If you've got another take that works for your style, that works better, I'm comfortable with that. And it's been funny with Hasbro because the G.I. Joe team was like, oh, sure, they got to have multiple uniforms. So no problem. You know, they've got variations of it. And then the Transformers team was like, well, that's not what Optimus Prime looks like. So it's funny because, you know, the stuff is still in Hasbro that way. And so, you know, you just sort of hash the stuff out, comics versus toys, and you sort of explain the stuff. And you go, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Good. You know, go with it. But this whole idea of, you know, making toys based on, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I must suck at this because I haven't said you have to draw like this. So I don't know. They might want to. I'll mention it. I'm going to the G.I. Joe convention tomorrow or Friday morning, so I'll see the Hasbro guys there. I'll see what they say. They may just laugh at me.
That's right.
Call me silly.
I meant to ask
silly
you about
editor
that.
Man.
What's the deal with the G.I. Joe convention, real quick?
It's in Kansas City Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a little late to be promoting it, but yeah, that's where it is. And it's at the Hyatt Hotel Convention Center.
It's only like 8 hours
from
here.
City. Well, come on down. Come on down, say hi. I'll be at the IDW booth.
We do have a few listeners in the Kansas City area, so we'll make sure they go.
Yeah, make sure they go. Swing by the booth. Carlos and I will both be there.
Awesome.
So you can yell at us for having heavy duty in the comic and not Roblox.
Well, you can just explain away that was a Hasbro decision, right?
Yeah.
That's what I do. Hasbro is great because they really are like just an awesome partner, because anything that sort of like goes wrong like that, they're like, fans are just going to blame us anyway. Just go ahead and roll with it. Yeah, you know, like, I'm like, wow, you guys are awesome. Like, they'll just, we're Hasbro, we can take it. Yeah, you know, we're men. You know, give us the heat. So they're great in that regard. I think even if I were on a panel, I said that was my decision. You don't like it? That was my decision. They'll still blame Hasbro for it. Like, Hasbro gets such a bad rep with all this stuff.
He's always saying that because Hasbro.
Yeah. Hasbro threatened him, or you know, yeah. That's it's pretty funny actually. Like to watch this stuff. Where, you know, at my own job at Marvel, it was like, you know, I was the demon, and I'm like, wait, no, he's the demon now. This is great. It's the best of both worlds.
As we run out of time here, have you seen the movie?
I haven't.
You haven't seen it yet?
And I know I should, because it's actually out in wide release now. And the reason I haven't seen it is that there was an opportunity for me to see a sneak screening of it, which I couldn't attend because of a prior obligation. And then I didn't go last weekend because a good buddy of mine was getting married out of town. So I was down doing all that wedding, partying, and all that sort of stuff. Didn't get a chance to see it then. And I haven't seen it this week because I had to take Friday off to go to the wedding. And now I got to get ready for JoeCon. So it's been crazy. And I haven't seen it. Yeah, well, which makes me just a terrible human being.
When you have, since you're editor for G.I. Joe and Transformers at IDW, does it both have, you know, big box office movies and a lot of attention on the movies and a lot of attention on the tie-ins with not just with the toys that they're releasing, but also the comics that you guys are doing? How do you guys kind of measure in the office if the buzz for the movies is affecting what you're doing?
Well, in the case of you know, the new Transformers movie, we were around for the first Transformers movie, so it was sort of like, how's the buzz compared to that movie, and how are our books doing compared to the time of the first movie? So the good news there was they were doing great. In the case of G.I. Joe, we didn't have as much to gauge. And then I think what you do is you just sort of see what people are saying after the movie comes out, and then people either like it or they don't, or they're indifferent to it, or, you know. And fortunately, IDW has been in a great position this year that we've had tie-ins with four big, highly promoted movies, starting with the Star Trek movie in May, which obviously was just a colossal hit.
Yeah.
The Terminator Salvation movie, and then Transformers, which again was huge, and, you know, G.I. Joe, which we're all hoping does well, and had a great opening weekend. Yeah, so we're sitting there going, hey, you know, we're happy, our books are selling, and the people we're in business with, our partners, and you know, I've definitely formed some friendships over at Hasbro, so I'm thrilled when their stuff does well, because I always like to know that my friends' bonuses are going to be bigger over there this year. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to gauge, and the interesting thing there is so many people link the comics industry and the movie industry, but in terms of sales, they don't actually impact all that much on comic sales is what I've seen over the years, and that's sort of true here and over at Marvel when X-Men and Spider-Man movies were coming out. There was not, like, the week Spider-Man came out, there was not a sudden surge in Spider-Man books being sold. There was a blip. I mean, you could see that was the week, but it wasn't like, you know, sales doubled or anything.
Right. One other question that I had, you guys, I've seen you started to release these best of trades.
Uh-huh.
This is actually the reprinting of classic comics that Marvel produced. Do you know anything about kind of how that came to be, and how much of that you guys are going to continue?
Yeah, I mean, we've got six in the works, and we've added two more, which I don't know if they've been announced yet. So I don't know. I should say more than that, but I don't know that we're going to dig that much deeper. I mean, how many people really want to buy the Best of Clutch? I don't know. You know, I mean, heck, Zap was one of the original 13 G.I. Joes. I don't think there's a huge fan following of Zap.
I don't know that you could fill a
fill a trade with Zap.
A single issue, much less a trade.
Yeah. So I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, say the Best of Snake Eyes, yeah, I can sell that. Best of Duke, yeah, definitely. Best of Hawk, yeah. Best of Scarlet, sure. You pick those characters, and you know, we pick the top three up front on both Cobra and G.I. Joe's side. And when those are performing well, we decided we'd add two more and see how those did, and then we'll sort of take it from there. But, you know, we're also reprinting the classic G.I. Joe stuff in the trades, and we are continuing that beyond the initial 50 issues. We're going to go beyond that. And
so you're doing trade reprints for the stories,
the original
order, as well as doing the best of.
Yeah. Yeah, because some of those in the best ofs, you know, we're not going to get to for another 2 years.
Right.
So, you know, and somebody who just is a casual G.I. Joe fan can pick up, oh, Best of Snake Eyes. Well, that'll be fun. I like that. I like Snake Eyes. But they're not going to pick up 15 volumes of G.I. Joe classic trades. You know, so it's sort of made for the different sort of audiences. But yeah, we are going to continue the classic Marvel comics, collecting those, which is a bit of a question I get asked all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure. I would imagine that that's hard stuff to track down for anybody wanting to go through or wanting to have those these days.
Yeah, and some of those back issues are A, hard to find, and B, if you can find them, are really pricey.
Yeah. And nowadays, too, for people my age who can remember, you know, buying them, the paper and quality isn't all that good. So even if you did find it, you'd probably rather read the trade.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and we are recoloring them for the better paper stock that'll last longer, and that's a time-consuming and fairly expensive process, and we're gonna continue doing that so that they do, you know, look good when they're out finally. I do have to run now.
Yeah. Thanks for man. This has been very in depth, and thank you very much for your time that you've given us.
Sure thing, Adam and Brian. Thanks for all the questions. This is fun. Have me back anytime. I'd love to talk about Joe. Love to talk about Transformers. Any of this stuff.
Cool. We really appreciate it, and keep up the good work with the stuff. Really enjoying all the G.I. Joe series right now.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
See you, man.
Enjoy
right.
JoeCon.
I'm sure I will.
Bye.